male and female, he created them, towards a path of dialogue on the question of gender theory and education. Now, that's the title of a new document released by the Vatican's Congregation for Catholic Education, and it has generated a lot of attention within and beyond the denomination. For reaction from people of faith most directly targeted by this publication, I am very grateful to be able to turn to Marianne Duddy Burke, Executive Director of Dignity USA. Marianne, welcome to State of Belief Radio.
Thank you. I am so honored to be with you.
Well, Dignity is celebrating its 50th anniversary this year, and I want to be sure that we talk about that organization itself, but we need to start with this Vatican document. From your perspective, what makes it so disturbing?
Well, this new Vatican statement on gender theory and LGBT issues as they pertain to education really highlights much of the reason that Dignity USA got started and still exists. Essentially, it continues the soul-crushing rhetoric that if you are not a straight cisgender person, you are not in conformance with God's plan. It denies any possibility that you can help reflect the immense and unimaginable creativity of our God in the world. It's just a very, very damaging document.
Mm-hmm. As I understand it, the Pope himself has not signed off on this document. Does that really matter?
Well, there's a couple of issues related to that that are still up in the air. One is that the document is still coming from, you know, essentially a cabinet office of the Vatican. So it carries that weight, and it carries it across the largest private educational network in the world, you know, which is run by Catholic institutions, if you take them all together.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, for a long time, we have been hearing that there were going to be two Vatican documents around the issues of transgender and gender identity that would be coming out, this educational one, and then a broader, more doctrinal statement. So we don't know if that document is still in the pipeline somewhere, or if that has sort of been set aside and that will not be coming forth.
Pope Francis has spoken out publicly against what he referred to as gender theory, even as he has recognized gay and lesbian persons as valued in the eyes of God. Is this a simple matter of politicizing scientific ignorance, or is something more sinister at work here?
I think that what we are seeing is really the conflict between Catholic doctrine on sexuality and gender and the pastoral approach that is so at the heart of Francis's ministry and so much at the heart of our church in general. I mean, it is absolutely impossible to say on the one hand that all people are created in God's image and should be treated with dignity and respect, and on the other hand, to say things like, you know, being LGBT means that you are objectively disordered and that any intimate relationships are intrinsically evil. You know, to try and welcome LGBT people in our families as full members of the church while still condemning us. I mean, it's just been an impossible dilemma to reconcile for a very long time. And I think that, you know, Francis and his papacy are sort of typifying that how that struggle comes to life as you really try and live it in the 21st century.
In the ministry that you oversee, how impactful is this kind of public statement from the hierarchy?
You know, for many people, the moral credibility of the Vatican and of Catholic bishops on issues of sexuality and gender has been undermined in recent decades very extensively. So for many people, a document like this is something they can easily brush off and set aside. However, our concern is for the people who do take this kind of statement coming from the leadership of the world's largest Christian denomination very seriously, especially people who are just coming to terms with their identities, who are just coming out and who see in this document some kind of condemnation or pressure to be other than who God created them to be. Mm-hmm. I think it's also important to remember that the Vatican speaks to a global church. You know, it's not just to us here in the U.S. It's not just to westernized countries, but in many countries, particularly in South America, in many countries in Africa, in some countries in Asia, the Catholic Church is very much interwoven in the entire social structure, legal structure, government structure. Mm-hmm. And documents like this have a very repressive effect on people in those nations.
Is there any kind of dialogue going on between the Vatican and scientifically informed persons? Do you know? Because a statement like this sounds more like U.S. culture war propaganda than either biological science or pastoral ministry.
You know, it seems very clear to us that the Vatican has rejected the teachings of social science and, more importantly, rejected the testimony of millions of people of faith, people of its own church, who have wanted to dialogue around our experience of finding our gender identity and sexuality to be a blessing. You know, definitely there are challenges we encounter in the world, but mostly, you know, being able to live fully as who you are is a real gift and something that we find to be a very spiritual process. And I think that the failure of church officials in most cases to enter into that kind of dialogue and to have ongoing relationships with people who can speak their own truth mm-hmm. and to consider that in shaping the teaching is a real failure. I think that it just shows that this doctrine really trumps any kind of lived experience, mm-hmm. and that has tragic consequences for many.
Marianne, I don't have to tell you the Catholic Church plays a very influential role in American culture, education, healthcare, and lawmaking. How dangerous is it that such an anti-science document can be released as official church policy and guidance?
One of the things that I think we in the U.S. have to be very much aware of in this particular document is the line that says that this teaching is meant not only for Catholic institutions, but for Catholics who teach in other settings. So really, it's an instruction to Catholics who teach in public schools, who teach in private schools, whether they be from other denominations or just freestanding private schools, that they should be following these Catholic doctrines in how they deal with students and families. And I think that's very disturbing. Mm. Now, on the other hand, we know that strong majorities of Catholics, whether they be Republicans or Democrats or somewhere else on the political spectrum, are very supportive of LGBT people, of LGBT civil rights, and are not going to be swayed by this. So that's our hope, and that's the reason that we sort of ended our response to this document with a call for Catholic parents and educators to speak up about their experience of what happens when you try to suppress somebody's true identity and how psychologically, physically, emotionally, and even spiritually damaging that can be.
Against that backdrop, I want to talk about Dignity USA. Give us, please, a brief description of what Dignity USA is, and tell us what is the relationship you have with the church's hierarchy?
Dignity USA is actually one of only two pre-Stonewall organizations for the LGBT community that is still really having an impact in the world, and we're very, very proud of that. The other one is Metropolitan Community Churches, or MCC. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of remarkable that the two longest-standing queer organizations are both faith organizations. I think mm-hmm. that's kind of miraculous. Dignity USA is Catholics committed to LGBTQI equality, justice, and full inclusion in our church and society. Right now, we really don't have much of a dialogue or a relationship with the Catholic hierarchy, and that really goes back to 1986 when the Vatican released what is popularly known as the Halloween letter. Mm. It really was a pastoral letter, so-called, distributed to all the bishops of the world, that said that unless an organization adhere to Catholic teaching that says that, you know, same-sex relationships are wrong, they're intrinsically evil, is the language used, and is quiet about civil rights, we essentially are dissenters and should not have any access to Catholic space, Catholic institutions, or Catholic leadership.
Marianne, you've been involved with Dignity since 1982, I think, and have held leadership positions dating back to 1985. How have the challenges for the organization changed over these decades?
You've really done your research. You know, when I first joined Dignity, the climate was such that people came to our masses using fake names or only using their first names. When we had social events, there was always escape routes planned because sometimes we were raided by the police. And, you know, people who were married or people who were in teaching jobs were kind of allowed to get out the back door first so that they wouldn't be arrested and publicized. It was really impossible for a lot of people to put the word gay and Catholic together. Mm. So now we are seeing, you know, parents regularly going to their kids' weddings or parents calling us up to say, you know, I have a 7-year-old who's in a Catholic school who is transgender. What can I do to make sure that my child is safe and supported there? You know, we've just seen this social transformation in which Catholics have shown their commitment to the teachings of social justice in our world and to their love for their family members and their neighbors who are LGBTQI. And they, you know, they really are in the forefront of the justice movement for us, whether quietly or more activists. We still struggle with the leadership of our church adhering to doctrine that just doesn't make any sense.
In 1988, the Vatican began aggressively expelling Dignity from Catholic facilities. Would you comment?
Many of them had been meeting in Catholic churches, and we no longer had access to that. Fortunately, most of our chapters were taken in by Protestant ministers and congregations with open arms, and we have been deeply grateful for that welcome. But it definitely felt like kind of a hidden church, and there was always a sense of both intimacy and fear in those gatherings. Certainly over the years, we have come to realize that in some ways being expelled from the physical church was a gift that allowed us more freedom to speak our own truths. You know, it was really only after the expulsions that we were explicit about our support for same-sex relationships, for people transitioning in their gender identities, for the fact that we had been blessing partnerships, you know, since the early 1970s, and that we were able to be more public in sort of living our truth and challenging church doctrine. And I think that that has been a very important ministry to the LGBTQI community as well as to the larger church.
As you celebrate the 50th anniversary of the organization, what today are the biggest challenges facing LGBTQI Catholics?
Yeah, I think that we really are working on two different fronts. One, we are increasingly aware of our responsibility as sort of a privileged organization, you know, in the U.S. to our kin globally. So as part of our celebration, we're actually hosting the Global Network of Rainbow Catholics, which brings together leaders of Catholic LGBTQI organizations from all around the world. And we are bringing in our leadership from across the country to learn about what are the accomplishments of these leaders and what are the challenges that they face in their countries. And how can we think about our mission differently so that it is a little bit more international in scope?
You have an annual conference coming up. What do our listeners need to know about that?
We actually meet every 2 years nationally, and we will be doing that for the 24th time in Chicago, July 5th through 7th. Again, many of our international guests will be joining us for this, and we're going to both be celebrating our past 50 years and then engaging everybody who comes in planning for the future. What are the challenges and what can Dignity really do to move our mission of full inclusion in church and society forward over the next 50 years?
Our listeners, some of them for sure, are going to want to know more about Dignity USA. Tell them how they can keep up with what you're doing and how they can give you support.
Oh, we always need support. We welcome folks to volunteer with us, to contribute financially, to join us as a member, to follow us. You can join through our website, dignityusa.org. We have a Facebook page, also Dignity USA, as well as Twitter, at Dignity USA.
Marianne Duddy Burke is Executive Director of Dignity USA, committed to the belief that gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, queer, and intersex Catholics in our diversity are members of Christ's mystical body, numbered among the people of God. This year, Dignity USA is celebrating its 50th anniversary jubilee. Marianne, thank you so much for taking time to be with us today on State of Belief Radio. You're always welcome here.
Well, thank you, and may your work continue to be a blessing.
This conversation is part of Whosoever You Love, our semi-monthly series affirming the worth and full value of LGBTQ persons within and beyond religion. Whosoever You Love is supported by the Arcus Foundation, which is dedicated to the idea that people can live in harmony with one another and the natural world. Learn more about Arcus and its partners at arcusfoundation.org and find the entire series at www.whosoeveryou.love.